Hi, everyone. Welcome to Real Vision's Daily Briefing. It's Monday, April 4th, and we are coming to you live from the Real Vision Macro Experience event out in San Diego. And look who's here with me, Tommy Thornton from Hedge Fund Telemetry. He's here along with a lot of our other all-stars, and we're going to be unpacking a lot of topics. Tommy, great to see you.
Nice seeing you. It's great to finally meet and do this in person. It's fantastic.
That's right. This is the first time Tommy and I are meeting, even though you guys see us live all the time.
I know.
And it's a perfect time, right? It's going to be a great week to talk about this because we have a lot going on in the markets. It's midday here. We know U.S. stocks just closed, though. And it kind of feels like we're in this a little bit of a holding pattern. We saw stocks rally today. We had some big moves. Twitter, we're going to talk about that in a moment. But it seems like this pause and everyone's trying to figure out what comes next. So why don't you just sort of set the scene for us? Like, where are you thinking about the markets?
Well, we've seen extremes. We were at extremes coming into the year at the highs, and then we just had a major buying opportunity, and now we're kind of fading a little bit. And yeah, we had the mega cap stocks leading the charge today, and the equal weight S&P was mostly flat. I just think that right now it's a little precarious. I think that earnings starting in the next week are going to be really a big tell of what's happened with inflation, wage inflation, input costs across the board are really going to affect a lot of companies.
And consumer demand too.
And right? Consumer demand. I think there are some signs that there is some demand destruction starting. So we'll see.
Well, we know that people are feeling inflation. We know that. Which is a question is how much is it sort of impacting their behavior and how much is showing up now and what's coming? I mean, it's a really hard time to gauge what's happening, right? Because you have, and I think this is one of the themes we're going to talk about this week, Ryle and I touched on Friday, you have the macro environment and it feels like maybe we're entering a different period, we know, with interest rates, but then you've had these shocks, right? The coming out of the pandemic, still working through that. Now you have the shock of war, you have commodities. Kind of hard to figure out what's going on here. How much of it is sort of a structural shift to something else and how much of it is maybe temporary factors?
Well, there's been two main catalysts that I've been watching. First is the Fed, and that to me is the most important thing happening right now. Ukraine and Russia came into play, and hopefully we see some sort of ceasefire or just de-escalation. It's just been tragic. But the Fed, let's talk about it a little bit. They are going to see next week a CPI number that is going to be red hot.
Yeah.
Red hot. And maybe the highest in our careers that we've seen as professionals. So what's the Fed going to do? There's 6 weeks in between the last meeting and the next meeting. I think the Fed could do an emergency hike.
I think really?
Well, here's the other thing. The market.
So a hike in between their regularly scheduled meetings doesn't happen. It used to happen more often. It rarely happens now. And usually when it does, it's easing because there's some sort of, you know, global crisis or something.
Correct.
I don't even know. When's the last time they did an emergency hike? I don't even know. It's been a while.
I think they did early 2000s or right after
2000. Yeah, okay. So it's been...
I don't know. You know, historians, let me know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, somebody look it up. But it's been a... But that fact that we can't remember means it's been a long time since that happened.
Oh, yeah. But they have cover to do it because the market has risen off the lows. And I don't think that they care about the market. And so if that happens, it'll restore some credibility. And I think they'll do 50 at the May meeting in the first week of May. And if they do that, they're going to have a lot of their, you know, I think they want to be, you know, over 2%. I think they're going to get there probably maybe into summer. So I think that's a good thing. I think it's also important because this CPI is going to be really hot. And that was due to Ukraine, and you had wheat prices and all the grains and everything was so high. Crude was at 130. You had this, and now everything in the commodity sector or the markets have come down and they've given back a lot of that Ukraine boost. So the
next, which is important, not the big gains, but that last spike up.
I'm not a super bear on commodities that we're going to see this big drop, but I think it's going to level off at a higher level from where we were. And the other thing is the Fed should go as aggressive as possible, because the April CPI, which will be announced after, I believe it's after the May meeting, will probably come in a little lighter than what we have.
So now's this month. The cover for them to try to make up the ground that being behind the curve.
You're going to hear all the people come on TV say, "Oh, Fed mistake," or policy mistake. They're tightening into
a recession, right?
Slowing.
Well, isn't that what the bond market's telling? The longer end of the bond market's telling us that they think that they are about to make a policy mistake, or that there's going to be the collateral damage is going to mean that recession is inevitable.
Well, there's as someone said, there is a yield curve for every narrative.
Yes. And so, which we're going to be talking. I'm stealing that line, by the way, for introing one of the sessions at this.
But there's going to be so many people here that will talk about the yield curve.
Yeah.
And it's been talked about so much. But yes, I think we will probably see a recession. And let's just say it's like 2000 and the tech bubble burst. We never technically went into recession, but when you had such high growth and then it came down to basically flat.
Feels like one.
It felt like the end of the world.
Right. And so that's a great point, because you don't need a negative GDP print for people to be like, wow, things feel like they're bad.
Yeah. And,
you know?
And the Fed needs to do something aggressive, because you have housing markets. You cannot buy a house these days. It is impossible to buy a house.
We walked around this area. We're in a beautiful area, Del Mar. Wow. We were looking at the prices and they're just
And awful. There's a lack of inventory. Interest rates are going up. It will slow. Yeah. Not fast enough for people that are looking to buy, but I think that's in the cards.
I want to ask you a question, and send your questions in. We'll take them. It's not going to be We're still getting them. It's a little bit harder when you're live trying to get them. But I do want to ask this, because you mentioned commodity prices coming off that Ukraine boost. Shari C. From the exchange is asking, crude oil seems to have pulled back notably. Is it a good opportunity here to establish a position if a ceasefire does not materialize in the coming weeks and months? Now, we have no idea, no way of knowing about a ceasefire, Russia's plans. We're going to have some geopolitical conversations here trying to tackle that. But just from a trading perspective, how are you positioning yourself around energy right now?
Well, the energy specialists that I listen to, they see a lot of tightness in the market. And they believe, even without Ukraine, you have Europe is still going to suffer with. I think crude prices can go up, but they may not go up as dramatically as some people. You know, there are the crude bulls that think we're going to be at $200 a barrel. That maybe could happen, but I think it's more likely that we're going to stay within a 10 to 20% range from here to higher. And I've been trading it up and down a little bit.
What about the equities? Because some of those oil companies have seen big gains over the course of the year. Do you jump on things in the equity space, on the energy space from here, or does it feel like you want to wait and see?
I want to see the equities come in a little bit. If I get a 5% drop in equities, XLE or XOP, I'm in. I'll buy. But right now, I think that it's a little frothy. Exxon gave some guidance, which wasn't necessarily stunning. So I think they're going to be conservative as well.
Yeah, it sounds like they always are, but it sounds like they're going to be. What are you looking for? You mentioned earnings are going to be key here. What do you want to hear? And is it going to be sector by sector? How are you going to approach this?
Okay, so one thing that's really interesting is the financials will kick it off. And we've seen other quarters where the financials have gone up into the quarter, into their numbers, and then they fade. This quarter, they're down significantly into their numbers. And I know that there are less deals that have happened this quarter. You've had a lot of stuff with nervousness with Ukraine.
Yeah, we were circulating a story about the number of deals that have been pulled.
Right.
It's larger than some of us. And you're talking Europe and US too.
Exactly. And it's debt deals. It's a lot of things that it's going to be a lot slower. So are these prices built in here? Mm. And I think we'll see. I think we'll see how that goes. I'm looking at them as longs. I wrote about it today. I think we're getting closer to longs. They're getting exhausted on the downside. So I'll take advantage of them. I want to buy the financials. It's hard when you also have interest rates that are they're not going up. You have a yield curve that is inverting. I mean, it's not ideal, but if it steepens, I think the financials will be better off. Let's just say.
What about tech? This is a, you know, we saw them moving again. I thought everyone was in this environment. When you have a higher interest rate environment, all future earning companies, you know, it's not going to be, we're going to see a rotation. We're going to go into value and defense. And yet some of the things that have been rallying have been tech again.
I know. They just forget the narrative that they had. Oh, high interest rates are going to kill tech. Yeah, I've heard it from some really smart people, some people that are going to be speaking here. And it hasn't mattered.
You can tell it's going to be, we're going to have some good conversations.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be like you said on that time.
Yeah, you. Julian.
He's actually doing Julian Briggs doing that daily briefing on Wednesday. It's not often that our audience.
I'm going to come over there
and just like, from the side.
Yeah, I'm going to be like.
Anyway. I'll be sure to ask him. I'll put your question in, Tommy.
Well, the thing is with tech, you've had a lot of the mega cap names. Microsoft went down hard. Apple went down hard. Amazon was down. They're back to a little higher levels or where they were near their highs. And you still have semiconductors not moving up as they had. You know, there's been some gains. I was long NVIDIA and AMD recently and, you know, take some profits. I think it's really my main focus this year has been tactical trading. I think that you cannot get so comfortable in anything, long or short, to where you can say, oh, I'm going to look out 12 months on anything. I mean, I'm doing a panel on what's going to happen for the next 12 months. I'm going to tell people every day is a new day. Don't be complacent. Take trades, take profits, and limit your losses. And don't be stubborn. This is a market that you just have to, you know, keep moving.
That's a tough environment.
It's really tough.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I did notice last week, I started to hear just a little bit, but Tina come back into the conversation. There is no alternative. Is that, given what you just said, that does not sound like a strategy that never was a strategy, I guess, but in effect. Do you think that effect is in play? Do you think equities are getting flows just because there doesn't seem to be another place people can figure out where they want to put their money?
Well, what I've seen in the last 2 years, our people are chasers. People will chase whatever's green. Meme stocks are going up.
I saw
let's
that.
Let's buy them.
End of last week, hugely.
You get tech moving, let's buy tech. It's easy. And then the music stops and there's no chair and look out. So that's kind of what I'm watching. And they bought energy, they bought commodities, and they got bagged at the highs. So that's the problem.
Is this stock rally over for now? I think we touched on it before, but this is a big question for people. Okay, we bounce. Some people are saying it's a bear market bounce. It's over. You got to get out. Other people feel like, you know what? Maybe there is, because of some of the things we're talking about, you know, there's just a constant bid to the market and you can still play equities, and that maybe the earnings are going to be better than we think and surprise on the upside.
It's all a matter of perspective and positioning. So let's just say the market continues to, you know, travel a little higher into numbers. I think then the market will sell off. It's just, if we were down on, and expectations were really low, I think then it's easier to, you know, oh, they came out with just okay numbers, but the stock rallies. So I just think that you could have some good numbers and you might see some sell-offs just because people get too long and they're not positioned properly. So yeah, I don't think it's Tina. I think it's more FOMO. I think people are want to jump on that green, you know, highway to prosperity. That's the...
Well, and when things move, they move so much that if you do that, sometimes you are making a lot of money, but you just have to watch out because it's, you know, when it turns, you're gonna get hit with that.
And I'm real good at market extremes. And right now, like Raul said on Friday, we're kind of at a place in the middle where we don't know where we're going to go. Are we going to go higher? We could, but we're going to need other sectors to come in and do some lifting. But I think it is a bear market. I think we're going to see earnings tail off because of inflation, because the Fed is going to raise rates aggressively. And not every time the Fed raises rates that the markets sell off. Sometimes it's just sustainable market and economic trend. But I think what we've seen in the last couple of years, we've seen things that a lot of economists can't explain.
Yeah. Speaking of FOMO and momentum, what do you make of Elon Musk taking a stake in Twitter? Huge gain in Twitter stock today.
Yeah. It's not that surprising. I mean, he's talked about doing something with social media and he's on social media and he's made a pretty good market for himself in Tesla stock and crypto stocks and or cryptocurrencies. And so, yeah, it kind of makes sense. But the thing that I don't understand is he's talking about like freedom of speech or freedom of the press and all, you know, all this, what people can say or can't say. You know, he's a CEO of a $1 trillion company. And so you have consequences of what you say and what you can
he's already,
and can't say.
He's been already ensnared in some trouble around that because you have a lot of compliance rules about fair disclosure, public fair disclosure of, you know, when you're, so there are a lot, there's a lot of regulation around that.
Yeah. And, you know, fake buyouts, you know, it's a thing, you know, it's a something, you know, a little.
So do you, what would you, with that huge gain, what would you do with Twitter stock today if anybody was holding it? I mean,
I was long, and I sold it recently. It was just a trade. I would have sold some and I told some people to sell it. And it could go a little bit more.
Tesla was also up. Someone said, why is Tesla up if he's buying a stake in Twitter? And I said, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's Elon Musk, right?
Because people are buying calls and it's a gamma squeeze and it's jump on the, you know, it's green, go. You know, it must be good. But they just came out with their deliveries and they were a little light of consensus. And when I say a little light, we're talking 7,000 cars. And for a major automaker, 7,000 cars would never be an issue.
Yeah.
But with Tesla, it you know, they calculated to the, you know, the 1,000, not, you know, 100,000 or, you know, it's just the crazy thing is that estimates actually came down. And I heard of the Tesla IR, the investor relations, sent around to the sell side analysts that cover Tesla. And they said, where are you on your estimates? Okay, now, there is a very well-known analyst. I will say he's on a lot talking about Tesla. He always has a very high price target. He covers Apple. He has the highest price target there too. His number came in a lot lower and it moved the numbers, the consensus lower. But a week ago, he was telling people on Twitter that they were going to beat the street estimates by 15%. So, you know, it's just one of those things that...
Gotta be careful.
Well, it's not just that. I just think it's a bit unethical.
Right.
Let's just say that. But look, their numbers are they're up 67% year over year. That sounds great. But quarter over quarter, they're flat. They're up half of 1%. You know, whatever. And look, everybody, all the automakers have supply chain issues. They have, you know, chip shortages.
Yeah, it's still
So look, they have.
We're hanging on to such an old car, and we have to keep this thing running until the supply chain. I feel like so many people feel the same way.
So demand destruction. When prices go up, demand can fall off. The Model Y, which is Tesla's best-selling car, probably between Model 3 and Y, they don't break it out, but it's $63,000 now.
Yeah.
That's a big ticket,
yeah.
Especially with all the chaos happening in the world. The markets are down.
Yeah,
I
when
think
people
that's tough.
Start to feel that, you know, we're not sure where we are with that psychology yet. Because yes, we feel inflation, but you're not sure how much that sinks in until you go through, you know, you go through it for a little while, and people really start to feel it squeezing every part of their life. Oh wow, we just had a big dump of questions. I think the Wi-Fi is a little bit delayed, so I just want to get to some of them. Ava asking, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Fed's QT plans, quantitative tightening, starting to roll the extreme, you know, extraordinary measures off. Do you see it happening considering the current yield curve inversion?
Yes, I do see it. The Fed has a mandate from the president to control inflation. They have to do something. They will do everything they possibly can. Raising rates, rolling off the balance sheet, they will do that. It may not be the end of the world, but they're going to be aggressive.
Yeah.
And they have to. They did so much.
Yeah.
And they're going to need the bullets, because a lot of people are already now talking there's going to be a recession in the next few quarters. Maybe not 2022, but 2023.
Right. John is asking from the RV site, what happens to the market in case of an emergency hike? Is that a message that the economy is in a good place? Keep current dots in place, but speed up the hiking cycle. I think you think yes, right? Like, this is their moment to try to get as much done as they can before the narrative changes and people are like, what are you doing now? Even though that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah,
that's the intent of the hiking, is to slow the economy and take the steam off. But once
that's
happening,
the stock market will come down. It should. And if it doesn't, they're going to hike more. That's not like the reason why they're hiking necessarily, but I think that they have the cover to hike, and they're not going to have a Fed put well under 4,000. And that will sting. That may take quarters, but yes, the market will probably freak out and probably go up the next day because
that's the world we're
Elon
living in.
Elon
right
Musk
now.
Will say something. I don't know.
On Twitter, now that he has hit the major stakeholder. Also, you know, the midterms are coming up in the U.S., and even though the Fed is supposed to be non-political, the more they can do away from an election, they probably want to. They don't like to be making big moves around an election one way or the other in that time frame. So that might...
I think you're right on that. And I think the midterm elections are going to be a complete... It's going to be chaos. And just... I turn off the news at night. It's going to be crazy. And I think that you're also going to see the president, he's going to have to make a decision on if he's going to run in 2024. And that's going to happen maybe after the midterms. Then everything starts to reshuffle.
Yeah.
And that'll be interesting. But we're getting too far out.
We'll talk
about that.
That's
in the
12 months.
Yeah. Well, that's 6 months. Put that, write that down.
John from the RV site asking, in your opinion, are we in 1994 to be followed by massive growth rally from 95 to 2000, or does it feel like more like 2007 to be followed by a massive crash?
Mm. Wow.
Part of the problem is it's hard to tell, right?
Well,
I think that's what I'm hearing from a lot of you guys.
Well, one of the things that, I mean, look, 1994, we had a bond market that did sell off, which, and tech stocks did go down. But we had a revolution happen with technology. You had Windows 95. You had the internet. You had people were buying desktop computers. They were buying everything because you can connect your house and your office to the internet. And for a lot of people, they don't realize just how incredible that was. But that was what lifted so much, and innovation was rampant.
We had a lot of that continue and accelerate through the pandemic, but a lot of people are wondering if it pulled forward a lot of what we would be seeing in terms of that.
I think there's a lot of companies out there that have not gone public, and there's hopefully a lot will in the coming year. because I think that would be good for the market. I think we need
competition. That's a great point. There has been kind of, with all of that's going on, we talked about deals getting pulled, but there has been a lull on that front too.
And the SPAC thing, people that have SPACs I read something today, they've given back $11.7 billion in SPAC deals. They're not going to do them. And there's new rules for SPACs. You know, it's not as easy as it was.
Yeah. And a lot of people got pulled into that, you know, those trades, and it's been tough. I know a lot of you were always cautious about all of them, but.
Well, it just was the Wild West. Anybody can go public tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Are you looking at, where do you see the risks? Because the other notable thing about the period we're in, I think, is that, you know, you have not only the uncertainty in Europe and what happens there based on what they have to deal with from a policy perspective, you have interesting things happening in Asia, you have China. For a while, we were watching and talking about SoftBank. There's been some changes there, but you know that there's going to be a lot coming out that this year from China. They have their big five-year plans unveiled. Weston's been all over. The yen had huge moves last week, and everybody's like, okay, wait a minute. Forex is doing some really interesting things. Not sure what's going to happen there, but it feels like it's big. Where do you see what are the risks that you worry about?
Well, Japan, I think I was talking to you a couple of weeks ago about it. Kuroda said we're gonna keep bombing our yen. We can let it devalue. That's mm-hmm. fine. That's what we want. And they said we're gonna stay on the same path with our central bank policy, which is basically counter to every other central bank. That's why the yen went down. And I think there's risk there. There's always been a risk in Japan. It's never materialized.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna speculate on when, but there's big risk there. I think the big risk is really in the U.S. with what the Fed does, because there's so much concentrated wealth in the U.S. and you've had so many foreign asset buyers of funds and sovereign wealth funds and governments, Swiss governments, bought so much U.S. equity. If that starts to slow down and you've had a lot of inflows, I mean, 2021 had the biggest inflows of any year in the last 20 years combined. If we go down a little bit more, those inflows could turn to outflows. Mm. And I've called them future sellers. So let's watch out for the future sellers.
So how are you positioned now? What are some of the things you like? Or do you feel like you're mostly short? Or are you, you know, how are you approaching this?
I was, like a couple weeks ago, I was massively long, and I've evened out my exposure more, a little bit short right now.
Good that you were massively long a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, it worked out. And now some of my shorts are not working out so well. But as far as on the long side, I like Paramount, the studio, and, you know, it was Viacom.
Yeah.
I think they're doing really well with their streaming. And they have a good slate of films coming out. And
that's interesting. That's a really competitive space.
And it's really, really cheap.
Ah.
It's a very cheap company. And as Mario Gabelli has said, they're not making new waterfront properties. And this is a waterfront property. So I like that a lot. I like a couple tech stocks. I like Palantir. I mean, everybody's like, how could you like them? But the government is spying on us. They're spying, you know, they're using their technology. Companies are spying on employees. They're not going to stop that. It's just going to get worse. It's a bull market for that. And I mean, Palantir is kind of a tricky company. I think there's some shorts involved. Kathy Wood sold it at the bottom. I was happy to buy it at those levels, and I think it still could go.
What about, yeah, what about the ARK? I mean, people use that as a kind of barometer. A few different people that we had on were kind of saying, gosh, it's sold off so much that mm-hmm. it kind of looks interesting. But then there's this hesitation, like the timing seems.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about it?
I was short a while ago and I covered and, you know, it was a 40% gain. I was like, great, you know. But the thing that's interesting is everything in that portfolio has just been mauled. Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, from Roku to Palantir. And the only one that really hasn't is Tesla. And it's her largest holding. And it keeps going up. But if that has some sort of, you know, slip on a banana peel type day, let's say the SEC has a, you know, knocks on the door of Tesla and full self-driving becomes something that's not or regulated out, I think Tesla could be a real problem. So that would be the last straw for ARK. I don't want to buy, you know, companies that don't make money. And there's a lot of people I know and smart people that said, I want to buy ARK because it's oversold. But in my personal process, I like to buy companies that do make money and are not unprofitable. And most of her companies are unprofitable. So yeah, there'll be reflex bounces, but it's not for me.
That's an important point because some people look at things and say, wow, it's really beat up. I mean, I think a lot of people do that when they're thinking about something. It's beat up. Look how much it's come off the high.
Yeah.
It's hard. You can't really use that parameter though, can you? Alone. Mm. You can, but you need to look at some other things, I would think too, because maybe it'll never go back to as high as it got.
So one thing I look at individual stocks with put and call buying. So if I see a company that has a lot of call buying, usually the price is starting to lift. And, you know, a lot of people on TV will say, oh, you know, that's the smart money buying. It's actually the dumb money buying. And in ARK, every time it's lifted, after a little bit of a lift, the call buying comes in. And then when it goes down, you have people buying puts. Mm. And that's usually what happens is they squeeze higher on with heavy put buying. So the, you know, just people are buying puts on the lows and buying calls on the highs. And it's a hopeful trade. I'm hoping it goes up. I'm buying calls. Oh, I think it's going to go lower. I hope it goes lower. I'm buying puts. You can almost do the opposite. And that's been like a theme that we've been watching probably for the last year because short interest hasn't really factored in. And you have so many new people in the market. They're buying calls, they're buying puts. The derivative activity is enormous.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I mean, it's not part of the market that a lot of people watch. Certainly, you know, some people just starting out don't watch. But it holds a lot of important information. You're kind of blind to some things going on if you're not paying attention to that.
Yeah, I have a few derivative traders that are on my chat rooms, and they know where the bodies are buried.
We've talked about this before.
Yeah,
actually,
they know where the bodies are buried. They do. They see where the big money will turn to, you know, buys or sells, and they just know. They just know. So get to know your local derivative trader and
just around the corner.
Take him out for drinks, and he'll tell you where everything's buried. You know, the bodies are buried.
And if not, we'll try to get some more to come on to sort of talk to us just about some of the trends we're seeing. Tommy, we're gonna have so many good conversations this week. It's gonna be fun to see all of you guys and some of the regular daily briefing guests.
Yeah, it's
Tony Greer, Jared Dillian's here. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Oh, Jared's here.
Jared's here.
Oh, I'm out. No, he's one of my buds.
Actually, he's right now.
No, he's great.
It's gonna be great. We're gonna have some good conversations. If you want to join along to the conversation, there are virtual tickets available, and I think there's some deals going on as well. You can find that at www.realvision.com/macroexperience. And we'll be back again live tomorrow. Mish Schneider is another one who's here. I don't think you've ever met Mish in person, have you?
Not in person.
I haven't either. I can't wait. But she's someone we don't have on the daily briefing all the time. She's usually behind the paywall, but we're going to bring her on live so you get a little taste of some of this stuff. She's a fan favorite and has a lot of good information, a longtime commodity person. So bring your commodity questions tomorrow for Mission. We will try to field as many as we can. In the meantime, have a great rest of your day. Take care and good luck out there. We'll see you tomorrow.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.